Good evening. Welcome to the big fight. What a week it's been. A monumental decision that's changed the political landscape of Jammu and Kashmir. Article 370 rendered effectively useless. The state being carved into two union territories, Jammu Kashmir and Ladakh. And then on Thursday, a comprehensive explanation from the Prime Minister on why this has been necessary. As Jammu and Kashmir moves towards normalcy with restrictions being gradually removed, it may still take some more time for it to all be sorted out. We look at what the Prime Minister said yesterday and ask whether the economic outreach that he's proposed has the potential to transform a state that has seen so much suffering for so long. Now, we'll be looking at this from four distinct sub-themes on the show tonight to give structure to this debate. Are capital investments enough to reach out to angry Kashmiri youth? We'll be looking at that. Will Pakistan and China allow India to transform Kashmir? Is the decision to bifurcate the state and essentially end Article 370 legally viable? And who will reach out to angry youth and separatists? Is the economic package being suggested the magic key? Also, what does this really mean for the mainstream political party? So, lots of sub-themes over there, but that's the overall scope of this program. But first, it's time for the first punch. It's time for me to introduce my panelists before asking them to make their one-minute initial remarks. I'm joined from Mumbai by Niranjan Hiranandani, Managing Director of the Hiranandani Group. He's got a real perspective on the prospects of economic investment, capital investment in Jammu and Kashmir. Hussain Masoodi, the Lok Sabha MP of the National Conference with me. Dr. Brahma Chelani, Professor of Strategic Studies at the Center for Policy Research, has a lot of concerns about Pakistan and China and whether peace can actually be achieved if these are considered bogeys. General Satish Dua, no introduction, one of the finest Indian Army officers in recent times. Somebody has served extensively in Jammu and Kashmir. He gives us the standpoint of security in the context of whether economic growth is going to be feasible. Sanjay Hegde, the senior Supreme Court lawyer, with us as well. Amit Rena is a spokesperson for Roots in Kashmir. He's a Kashmiri pundit. He'd moved away from Kashmir with his family in the 90s. What does this all change for him? These are important questions. Also, very, very happy to introduce with us a young professional in Mumbai. She is from Kashmir. Her family is over there. Yana Mitchandani, a video of hers went viral in the last couple of days. She joins us in the last couple of days on why she feels that Article 370 needs to go. But as I mentioned, it's time for the first punch. I'm going to go across to Niranjan Hiranandani first. Sir, in 1 minute, tell us why you believe that there are serious prospects for capital investment in Jammu and Kashmir.
Remember, Kashmir is virgin territory. Look at what the business and the world does in terms of investments. We want people to go all over the world, whether they go to the Middle East, they go to Africa, they go to the Far East, in order to increase the volume of business that they have in the country, whether it's question of tourism, whether it's question of handicrafts, whether it's in terms of natural and other things that we really need to do. Kashmir has all the raw material to really put it across. What it really needs is a flow inflow of both capital as well as entrepreneurship. There is no end to entrepreneurship as far as India is concerned, and I think there's no difficulty. As far as capital is concerned, maybe it'll take a little time because people are insecure about the position as to how much insurgency will continue because of Pakistan and what has been the history of Kashmir. Obviously, okay, There's going to be some sort of hesitation at the initial stages,
okay,
to bring,
sir,
in the first amount,
sir,
of money.
Sir, I'm interrupting you. Your 1 minute is over.
Security is restored.
I'll come back to you in a while. 1 minute over, sir. First punch, sir. You punched really hard. Yeah. We're going to move on. Come back to you later on. Sir, go ahead.
See, though,
in 1 minute, right? Why do you believe or why do you not believe that the prospects of economic growth can transform Jammu and Kashmir?
See, fundamental problem is that there is a grave issue, ethical issue and moral issue. I mean, a pledge has been broken, promise has been broken, and this is going to impact many, many years the psyche of the population of Jammu and Kashmir, Ladakh. Second is there this fundamental replica about the mechanism, mode and mechanism in which it was executed. See, it is in gross violation of constitution. Now you come to development.
Okay.
Development is possible only when there is peace. And I don't think that in days to come you can expect things to improve. We have right now 5,000, for example, 5,000 hotel rooms with good connectivity, good roads, but where are the tourists? See, because of peace. And you cannot, there can be no trade-offs between, you know, development and autonomy and identity and territorial integrity. You cannot, both, the basic premise is that, no, these are incompatible. See, yesterday how it was tried to be marketed,
okay.
That is factually misplaced.
Okay, factually mistakes. Go ahead, sir. Dr. Brahmanulani.
Well, two quick points. First, even if India had maintained JNK's special constitutional status, there would have been no let-up in Pakistan's asymmetric warfare against India. The Pakistan military regards its terrorist proxies as de facto special operations forces and employs them cost-effectively as a force multiplier against India. For India, the economic costs of Pakistan's proxy war have been greater than the costs of any war India has fought, including the 1971 war. Point number two, the original princely state of JNK,
yes,
is divided among three countries, but only India was maintaining special powers and privileges for its part of JNK. How does Pakistan treat its Gilgit-Baltistan and so-called Azad Kashmir, these occupied areas, as colonies? It recklessly exploits their mineral and water wealth.
Okay.
And
last
and it has demographically changed their profile.
Okay. A change in demographic profile. 1 minute over. We'll discuss. We'll flesh this all out.
So the status quo,
yeah.
If I could sum up, the status quo for India was no longer sustainable.
Okay.
Now the onus is on the central government to show that this constitutional change...
Rama, your time is up.
Will be meaningful.
This is the big fight. We will debate all of these points, I promise you, General Dua.
Taking off from what Brahma just said, I feel first quick point, purely from a military standpoint, the security situation will be better controlled now.
Yes.
There will be less of local pressures. As far as development is concerned, the Prime Minister announced a slew of measures. What is going to happen now as we move towards development, but what is also required is communicating with the people.
Okay.
Communicating with the people, we haven't had the consultative process, so we must communicate more with the people. Create hope in the minds of people.
Okay.
And remove this fear of uncertainty. We've lost the narrative earlier by not being able to contest the narrative from the other side. Today's world, if you don't fill up the space, somebody else is going to fill it up from the other side. So strategic communication, that was missing. Is the right time to create that while we roll out development, curb violence,
okay,
and have a stable LC on one side.
Okay. Mr. Hegde.
See, while I'm not going to get into the merits of the 370 argument, my basic concern is not only the Kashmiri, but the Indian state, the Indian constitution. You have given that a go-by almost by using a particular interpretation of one article to amend the Indian constitution.
Yes.
Derek O'Brien called it in Parliament, is Parliament passing legislation like a pizza delivery express.
Yes.
And you've started doing it to the constitution. The constitution is not a plaything for temporary majorities, no matter how vast. Constitutionalism is about looking after everyone in the country, the last, the least. India is a union of states. After this tremendous bifurcation, almost overnight, will any state in India be safe?
Okay.
Tomorrow, somebody might say that Bombay needs to be a union territory.
Okay.
And if Bombay is overnight changed into a union territory, where does that leave Maharashtra?
Okay. All right. Interesting points over there. Go ahead. As somebody who's come away from Kashmir, your thoughts at what has been achieved now?
See, the Article 370, 35A, were a provision, temporary provision, given by the constitution makers. There were certain reasons for it. But unfortunately, over the period, a Muslim majority state ended up using these provisions, the provisions for greater autonomy, to convert it into an Islamic state. And that's where the problem started. Exodus of Kashmiri Pandits, discrimination with women, discrimination with scheduled castes, discrimination with scheduled tribes, discrimination with West Pakistan refugees, discrimination on development with the rest of state. So it was a development which was focused largely on Kashmir. So, I think the biggest the loss which it did was not only the development, it was the progressive state of mind of Kashmir which was being blocked. And removing this article is a welcome step, because it now treats every citizen of Jammu and Kashmir on par with every citizen in India. The Constitution of India gives equal rights to everyone. Why should it be different in state of Jammu and Kashmir?
Okay. All right. Fair enough. And a critical set of points over there from a Kashmiri pandit, someone who has moved away over there, and somebody who's looking at the scenario and what it actually means. Do we have Yana at this stage with us? All right. We've got Yana Meechandani with us. She's got family in Jammu and Kashmir. She's a marketing executive, and a tweet of hers, in fact, a small video of hers on Twitter, went viral, where she spoke about the need for Article 370 to go, for real development in the state to take place. Yana, you've got 1 minute for your opening remarks on why you believe that development, possibly economic development, is the way forward.
Sorry, I didn't get it. Why do you think? What was the question?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
My question is, in 1 minute, your opening remarks. Why do you believe economic development is the way forward for Jammu and Kashmir?
It is definitely the way forward, because if you think about it, what is Jammu Kashmir lacking in? It is lacking in infrastructure, it's lacking in development, it's lacking in jobs, it's lacking in health and sanitation, it's lacking in education. And all that's been going on all these years for the last 70 years is just Azadi slogans and hate India propaganda. You know, tell me one thing, what used to happen before 370 that, you know, these people are claiming that we've been betrayed, you know, and this and that. What used to actually happen before the 370 was scrapped? How is it so good for Kashmir? I think I should not be the one being questioned. I should be questioning those who are doing the hate propaganda that how is it helping Kashmir to have the 370?
Okay, lots of important points. Would you like to actually answer that question by a young woman who's got family in Kashmir? She's lived over there. She said, what difference has 370 made?
See, you proceed on an erroneous presumption that Kashmir is way back in development. Kashmir, as a matter of fact, all the indicators are in support of economic well-being of the Kashmir.
Yes.
See, we have better per capita income. We have better exports, and we earn foreign exchange for the country. We produce 2.5 million metric tons of fresh fruit. And see, in every respect, we are in healthcare. Per capita spending is much more. Per capita health, per capita education spending is much more than the rest of the states. Our literacy rate is much better than most of the states. Where do we lag behind? Please don't sell this, market this in the name of development. We are already.
Have you seen the hospitals? We have nine universities functional.
Our graduates from these universities are working in rest of the country as well as in outside country.
No, but
country.
She has some points about roads and hospitals.
Yeah, but they're not
much
in
better
Kashmir
than Noida. I say road is much better in Noida. Move on any road to Pahalgam, move to Amarnath Yatra, move to Gulmarg.
Tourist destination and with the rest of the state.
And he says, sir, all the indicators, whatever are put, that indicate the good health of economy.
In 2017, I visited a place called Incheon.
See,
one sec, yeah, go ahead.
2017, I visited a place called Incheon. Notorious for the foreign kidnappings that happened. 6 months, no road connectivity, no hospital, no doctor. There was no power supply. There was no electrification, not even a mobile connection. Can you imagine in India you have villages in state of Jammu and Kashmir which did not have a mobile connection? There were only two phones. One was with army and other was an STD PCO. And they're saying there is development. No. IT contribution. India's largest export is IT, software. Contribution of J&K is zero. Zero. And food processing unit in Kashmir, zero. Plus, unfortunately, whatever development happened was Kashmir-centric. It did not happen in Jammu. It did not happen in
Ladakh. So your hope is that things will change now, right? That's yes. Your hope. Okay, one second, Mr. Hiranandani. I know you have to leave us.
Can I respond? Just half a second,
sir. I'll come back. Yeah, go ahead.
Look at Badi Brahmana. Look at Kathua. Look at Samba. We have big industrial estates where we have industries from rest of the country. See, people are not aware that we have a land grants bill, land grants act, wherein we give on leasehold rights to the investors from outside, and they have good presence there. We have hotel corporation of, you know it better, a hotel that is, in middle of the Srinagar. St. Orby Lakeview Hotel. We have presence of...
Which has a pretty
We have corporate centers everywhere. We have financial institutions everywhere. And then Jammu is more developed than Kashmir.
No, it is not.
And see... Ladakh, they want to market it. Ladakh is giving it. Ladakh is governed by a Ladakh Autonomous Hill Development
Council. The basic difference here is you say that a lot has already been achieved.
Much
the
more.
Glass is perhaps more than half full. Their point is perhaps the glass is half empty.
We are far ahead.
Okay, one moment. I want to go across to Mr. Hiranandani. Mr. Hiranandani, the Prime Minister, spoke about Minimum Wages Act being just on a piece of paper in Kashmir. He spoke about how he's going to bring in IITs, AIMS. He spoke about how he's going to popularize Kashmir as the world's biggest spiritual tourism center. Ladakh, he was speaking about ecotourism. He spoke about solar power generation. He spoke about more hospitals. He spoke about Indian Institutes of Management. Were these just words, or do you believe that after all of this has gone away, 370, 35A, and we have a bifurcation, that there is a real chance that this will not be words? This will be the future.
I don't think that the Prime Minister just was speaking words for the sake of speaking words. I think he means everything that he said. First of all, you have to understand that when you integrate the entire state with the country, the first and most essential part of it is that the communication level to the people must be honest and correct. And I don't think that the Prime Minister does not have the intention in order to put this into place. I think it's first of all to get the confidence of the people that we want to do it. In fact, we should do it as aggressively as possible, as quickly as possible, and maybe as of today, if not tomorrow morning. I think the speed at which we did the whole entire exercise of removing and changing the situation of the statehood, I think we need to do and push all these ideas and laws quickly about wage realization, giving the facilities to the people tomorrow. I don't think we need to delay. I think if we delayed it, or if there is a bureaucratic delay which takes place, which happens all the time in terms of execution, I think we need the same way the Prime Minister to monitor that all the aspects which he has committed to the people of Kashmir gets implemented. Number two, I think we need to give confidence to the international world that we mean business and we will tackle insurgency with a heavy hand, but we will add economic activity as of
Can the two go together?
And the third
can the two go together? Why would international investors, Mr. Hiranandani, want to come into Kashmir? Why would international investors want to come into Kashmir when there is so much uncertainty on the ground?
A great state. The people will be happy and we will be able to curb the insurgency activity to the youth which created a lot of problems.
General Dua, he hasn't answered that question. You answer that question. If we are talking about international economic investment into Kashmir for all of these reasons, how can we do that if the street situation is as bad as it's been?
No, I agree with you. If the street situation stays bad and if there is terrorist violence, beyond a certain level, the investor will be apprehensive to go there. There is no doubt on that. And that is all the more reason why we need to curb that with a strong hand, in the sense that we need to bring calm and quiet first in the countryside. And I said, with the present state of affairs, it is we are better placed, the security grid is better placed to keep that under control rather than earlier. So to that extent, once we start doing that, and with the present rules and laws that others are experts to discuss, when investment will start flowing in, and then we've already spoken as to what all can be
done. Dr. Chalani, he makes an interesting point. He says that, look, you can have development as long as there is a strong security grid on the ground. The army, the CRPF, police, everybody seems to be doing that now. Do you actually think that given the threats we face from Pakistan and the strategic challenge we face from China in the Ladakh region, that he's being realistic?
Well, I think there are two things. First is to ask ourselves whether Pakistan and China will allow India to pacify the Kashmir Valley. And we need to look at Kashmir Valley separate from Jammu and Ladakh. I think major investments in Jammu and Ladakh can serve as a model for the Kashmir Valley and for the residents there, that if peace returns to Kashmir Valley, they're going to get substantial developmental assistance and infrastructure development. But let's not forget that the China-Pakistan nexus,
yes,
has been cemented on the issue of J&K.
Yes.
Not only are they hand in glove on the Kashmir issue,
yes,
occupying large chunks of J&K, but Pakistan also ceded an important slice of its own occupied J&K,
yeah,
to China.
Okay.
So the Chinese-Pakistani nexus, which has been cemented on the issue of J&K, will make every effort to prevent pacification of the Kashmir Valley. And I think here...
So you're not optimistic.
No, I think...
But you're not optimistic.
No. Let me just conclude, you know, with what one important point, that what has happened this week is a potentially game-changing development.
Yes, it is.
So far, India's had a reactive approach to Pakistan's proxy war. We only respond to their provocations. Now, if we have to transform the developments of this week into a real game changer, we need to adopt a proactive approach. We need to deal with Pakistan's proxy war head on by maintaining a punitive momentum against that country.
So you're saying the same thing in a sense as him.
I am, of course.
Deal with the threat of Pakistan forcefully while working through our economic plans.
But deal with that threat in a new way,
which
is a proactive way, which is that
an offensive military strategy.
No, not an offensive military strategy. Pakistan has been trying to bleed us for more than 3 decades.
Okay,
we have not inflicted any real punitive costs on Pakistan.
Okay,
it's time to change tack.
Can I take 1 minute on this? Just
30 seconds. Go ahead.
All right, what can Pakistan do? There are three things. He can heat up the LC, the LOC, army has a very robust grid over there. He can increase terrorist violence inside these groups to increase terrorist violence in the hinterland, and also enhance the agitational politics, the stone pelting, etc. Nowadays, as of now, we know our security grid is very robust to take care of all these three issues. Right.
And yet we still have a Pulwama episode.
Yeah.
So we still have the threat of improvised explosive devices.
Right.
10 of them after.
Exactly.
So, but sir, we aren't able to handle as well as you suggest.
Exactly what I'm coming to that. So what you can't rule out ever, anywhere, is a lone wolf attack. Is an attack like that.
So why would investors come in this environment?
So the point is...
No, they won't.
That is why. They won't. They won't till we start rolling out our development in such a better way that the youth aspirations start getting met.
Okay.
All right.
All
and
right.
Whenever there is an army recruitment or a government recruitment,
see, the development
and Sanjay, I'll come to you in a moment. Yes.
The development may have been issue in Ladakh, may have been issue in Jammu, but in Kashmir it was never an issue. You have been covering Kashmir for so long. Have you ever heard Narebazi saying we want development, we want jobs, we want better infrastructure? I don't know why government
because
of India...
Because it's, for some reason, not been attractive enough.
No.
Right?
No.
People are attracted to the gun, to stone pelting.
Because you have allowed jihad to grow in Kashmir.
Who has allowed?
You have. The state of India, the government of India has allowed jihad to grow.
But the government of India has taken a very hardline position against all of this.
No, you have let it go unchecked.
You are suggesting more needs to be done.
I am saying the funding to Wahhabi institutions, you have allowed it. Funding from Saudi, you have allowed it.
It's being
you have
down,
gone.
No?
You have allowed to kill the Sufism of Kashmir. You have made 70% of the mosques today are Salafi and Wahhabi mosques in Kashmir. You have the basic Sufism of Kashmir has been killed. So the problem was never developed in Kashmir. It was in Jammu. It was in Ladakh. And unless and until you do not create social political environment to address these issues, you will never get development.
Mr. Hegde, would you agree with that? That at the bottom line is, we can't talk about the macro unless we fix the micro. Bridging the chasm which exists between what we are talking about here and the anger on the street goes, some would say, far beyond economic proposals.
Ultimately, it's been the same battle right through from Jawaharlal Nehru.
So then do we give up what the Prime Minister
No, just 1 minute. The battle,
because there's
always,
so much hope
the battle is always for the hearts and minds. You may have, as General Saab says, a very good security grid all over. But behind that grid, if your populace is sullen, you will continually spend time, money, energy reinforcing those grids. After 70 years, how have you broken in this battle for hearts and minds? You have broken, and I'm not blaming this government, mind you. How is it seen? It is seen as India had a constitutional promise. India has abrogated that constitutional promise. And this is my real problem. When you treat the constitution as less than something of a solemn charter, something which can be changed depending on the will of a few people, then the voices of a billion people have gone into just the voices of those two people, and those two people or three people or whoever they are have said, fine.
But a lot of people would say that the majority in this country entirely endorses what has been
the
happening.
The majority in this country.
Two decision makers.
Listen,
but they are backed by a large majority. Now, I understand the danger of majoritarianism.
I understand that.
But it's a popular decision. It is a popular decision in
mainland India. Is it equally a popular decision on the people of the valley in and around Srinagar? How will you sell it?
The state of Jammu and Kashmir is not only Kashmir Valley.
No,
it is Jammu, Ladakh and Kashmir.
Yes, but he's talking about Kashmir. He's talking about the valley.
So therefore, we come back to the same thing. The battle for hearts and minds. Question is, can you buy your way in through the development argument?
Yeah. Okay. Because there's
one very important rule of life. That is, there is always a tomorrow.
Yes.
You can do something today.
Can you buy your way through the economic life by your words?
Yes.
That's the question I'm trying to ask. And Mr. Hiranandani, as a managing director of a large, significant group, you've heard all of these arguments. Will you, sir, invest in Kashmir after all of this is done? If so, how?
I think the opportunities of investing in Kashmir are many. We just talked about, we have set up two of the largest IT centers in India, in Mumbai region. We already employ about 35,000 people working only in the IT sector. I think opportunities like this are plenty. There's also the role of tourism. I think you can increase the number of tourists to the valley at least by 10x.
But Mr. Hiranandani, my question is specific.
So whatever is the number of tourists, I'm putting you a little bit
on the spot, sir. I'm asking you, as a business person yourself, would you consider Jammu and Kashmir a place for you to potentially make investments? I'm not saying right now, maybe in the foreseeable future?
Answer is yes.
Why?
We would definitely love to look at Jammu and Kashmir. As soon as we can see opportunities and study the opportunities, we will invest into Jammu and Kashmir also. Yes.
In what areas? IT? Is that an area that interests you as a potential area of investment in Jammu and Kashmir?
We can look at IT. We can look at tourism. I think tourism and IT would be the best investment immediately. That is what I can think about. I think in the near future.
All right, sir. That's encouraging. And sir, we'll come back to you because we assume you're going to fulfill that promise. Mr. Masoodi, Why don't we embrace the sense of hope? When you have a leading businessman over there, say, and a responsible citizen of our country, I want to invest in Kashmir, I'm waiting for change and I'll do it.
One fundamental question is there can be no trade-off. You cannot, in the name of development, denude us of our autonomy, of our identity. You know, two do not, I mean, they have to go together. You cannot see any development in absence of peace, and you cannot have peace when you deprive the state of its autonomy, which was given by none else by the forefathers of the constitution, constitution makers, and then in a such a manner which is unconstitutional, palpably unconstitutional. You just make an assault on the constitution. You don't respect Article 3. You don't respect Article. Amend Article 370 by a presidential order, which is not permissible in the Constitution. You amend Article 370 is the only article that applies to Jammu and Kashmir of its own force. None of the articles.
Okay.
And you amended by a presidential order, and you don't have.
All right. You say that he says what a lot of people say is that is completely illegal. Some others would argue it's time to move on.
See, and that illegality compounds the problem.
But
that compounds the alienation. Because
I know this is being challenged in court, betrayed. But you still don't want to look at the possibility of a future without 370.
No, sir, people feel that we have been betrayed, and betrayed in an unconscionable manner.
The people, that is the only Rajat, the go ahead. That you represent,
and
Mr.
Second,
Masoodi.
And second
Mr.
Is
Masoodi, let me speak now.
Let him have his word.
Please allow me to respond to this family.
Yes, I will let you respond.
My point is very simple. Since the entire Pakistani cabinet views this channel, and the PTI listens to the views that are being expressed here. So let me be very clear about this thing. There is absolutely no illegality, how much you want to peddle this. For 70 long years, you have peddled an article saying that this is sine qua non for amalgamation of Kashmir to the rest of India, which is also patently false. This was done principally as a hogwash. The entire bluff has been exposed in the past week. Now you can continue to smile over it, gloss over it, do whatever, create a charade out of it, do your morchas, etc. But you have lost all political ground. You till now, it has been more than the entire parliament session and the days after that. They have not been able to come out with one cogent argument as to why 370 should still be there. This autonomy questions, all of these questions, I can tell you very much, 371 through 371, I worked
okay,
in
Mr. Hegde,
they also enjoy
and then
a lot
I will
of
come
autonomy.
Back to you.
Yeah.
But Rajat, just before I go across to him, one small addition. We may be viewed in Pakistan, but we are also viewed all across the world. We are also viewed all across the world, perhaps
fair
more
enough,
than any
enough,
other India
all,
news
all
network.
The more Pakistan.
So you know, no, not all the more, all over the world. It suits your
Pakistan
argument.
Friends.
It clarifies because people
channel.
Are wrongly editing and taking things and saying that it represents some sort
but
of Indian view.
Watching to
please read
channel.
The tweets.
They are watching, listening
right.
to your views.
So are many people all across the world.
Platform.
But you would
that's
choose to
I'm
focus
to
on
mention.
Pakistan and not
and
that.
Therefore,
but forget
I will
this
not allow
about
Mr. Masoodi
who we
to
broadcast.
Protect his family, the first
go
family,
ahead, Sanjay.
To peddle
listen,
a narrative.
Let me make the constitutional argument. The Indian constitution can be only amended through 368. That has an elaborate mechanism. What has happened today is that you have used the powers under 370 to rewrite Article 371 and reinterpret 370.
Yes.
That article says that in response, while interpreting 370, all these things will not apply. If 371 is so wide that you can just do it by executive fiat, you might as well amend the constitution and say there is no right to life in Jammu and Kashmir. There's no 21 in Jammu and Kashmir. There's no 14 in Jammu and Kashmir. That kind of constitutional violence cannot happen. I'll also give you one more historical example. Again, this was a solemn constitutional promise.
Yes,
that
temporary.
Was of privy purses. We told native rulers that they would have a privy purse. That was cancelled by an ordinance. The Supreme Court struck it down. Then the Indian government and the nation as a whole had to amend the constitution and get rid of privy purses. That constitutional amendment was upheld. If you have to do a thing constitutionally, please do it rightly.
Do you believe that this is being challenged in the Supreme Court? Do you believe that it's on shaky ground?
It definitely
big
is
flaws.
Vulnerable
big
to challenge.
It's being challenged, but do you believe that there is a reasonable probability that it could be thrown
Listen,
away by the
I,
court?
I've long ago, as a lawyer, learnt not to predict what a court will do.
No,
but I can certainly
from
tell
the legal
you,
merits.
I can certainly tell you that there is a substantial legal challenge that can be levied
okay.
to the process which has been adopted here.
You had a point, firstly about the family.
No,
he was.
See,
yes.
I mean, to market it, you just repeatedly mention families. See, if your reference to is one family that you persuaded to participate in elections in 1996 when nobody would volunteer for it, and took along head of that family to Geneva, and by none else but Vajpayee ji with I.K. Gujral to defend country, and now today you turn around and have one of the members of family as foreign minister by Vajpayee ji. Now you turn around and all of a sudden you find fault with the family, and second family you use to defeat autonomy resolution, and you say this is the wonderful family, not the first family, this is the wonderful family in Kashmir. Then
right.
in 2014,
so
you embrace the same family, and all of a sudden you just
okay,
this narrative of families.
30 seconds,
no,
Yana, you had a point.
No,
Yana, go ahead with the point you're mentioning, you've been waiting, go ahead. Yana, you had a point to make? I'll come back to you later, go ahead, Rajat, yeah.
See, the point is that nobody is questioning Sheikh Saab. But once you start making it a family fiefdom, that's where the problem. Now you're third generation,
not
and you're looking at the fourth generation.
He's talking about Farooq Abdullah.
Farooq Saab.
He's saying that Farooq Abdullah has been.
Let me come in.
Was dropped essentially after being favored in the past by various governments, including the NDA.
He came forward to fight the elections after 6 years.
Since Farooq Saab, there has been one more generation which has come in, and they are trying to ready the next generation.
That generation,
that's what the problem is.
That generation, you made foreign minister.
I think those are unfair observations.
Foreign minister in Vajpayee government are being made. And second time,
you cannot
more family. You partnered with this
today.
Okay, one sec. Yeah, go ahead.
Today, BJP is saying. A family of a former union home minister, a family of a former union cabinet minister, a family of a former external affairs minister, state, is anti-national. You cannot be, just because now they do not politically suit you. They form government with the same party a few years back. They are in the state for 3.5 years.
You
took along Farooq Saab to Geneva to defend you.
They are your political opponents. They
have belongs to the state. What about the 1990s? A lot of water has flowed.
Nobody came forward to fight the election.
Please let me complete.
Farooq Saab came to contest election 1996.
They have their
family. Okay, three people talking. Three people talking, and I can't hear or understand all three of you. I'm going across just for a moment to the general, sir.
Was the best person.
All right, one moment, sir. General, is it your fear or your concern that in the situation we are in right now, we will continue to see boots on the ground in these huge numbers, whether it's the CRPF, BSF, or the Indian Army, employed either defending the frontiers or involved in actually defending the turf in our cities, in Jammu and Kashmir, or our towns? This isn't going away, irrespective of how much investment you bring in.
Certainly, the boots on ground will have to remain for some time, as of now. It's only that when we start addressing, when we've been talking about development, as we start addressing the aspirations of the youth. You remember after Pulwama attack, just 4 or 5 days after the attack, there was a recruitment of Jackalai, my regiment.
Yes.
And people turned up in thousands. Now, imagine.
It's incredibly popular, recruitment in the army.
So the point
and
is,
two of the finest regiments in the Indian Army, you know, coming from Jammu and Kashmir.
Right. So the point I'm trying to make, so even then, that sentiment hasn't gone away. So
no.
If you start addressing the aspirations of the youth, a large majority of the youth that you'll find anger spilling on the street will be controlled. So getting back to the point, your question, yes, we will have boots on ground as of now. And as situation improves, which it will, as situation improves, we will be able to reduce that commensurately. That's what we've been doing all the time.
Okay. Yana, let me come across to you. You know, the point which was being mentioned by Mr. Masoodi earlier on was this. If you look at some of the numbers in Jammu and Kashmir, they're actually very good. For example, households in Jammu and Kashmir have the second lowest incidence of indebtedness in the country. Economic enfranchisement of the poorest in Jammu and Kashmir is borne out by near absence of landless labor, less than 2% of work. There are lots of numbers and lots of statistics which seem to indicate, for example, the absolute level of poverty in Jammu and Kashmir is 10% against the India average of 22%. So the argument which many have made is that, look, we weren't doing everything wrong in Jammu and Kashmir. There was a lot which was right. Why couldn't the process under the old laws have continued? If this is the situation,
okay,
why get rid of 370?
Okay. You tell me one thing. If everybody was so happy and satisfied, why was so much youth getting attracted towards drugs? Why were so many youth joining militancy? Why were they getting radicalized? Do you have any answers? Why was there so much unemployment? I agree that we have a lot of educated youth in Kashmir, but why are they still unemployed? Why in search for livelihood they actually end up joining militancy? Why do they have so much time to go to these Hurriyat rallies and get radicalized? Why are they not at their jobs, at their job desks? Why do they have so much time for, all these Jamaatiya lectures? And why do they have so much time to get radicalized?
Do you want to answer that? Yeah.
See, ma'am. First, we don't have our unemployment level is much lower. There is not a single farmer suicide in Jammu and Kashmir when you have thousands in Maharashtra and other places. And people go to militancy not because they are unemployed. See, it is that political aspirations have remained unaddressed. You started this whole process in 1953 with imprisonment of Sheikh Sahab, and it came slowly to 5th August 2019. See, please appreciate that use of muscular power is not the problem. You have made many experiments in Jammu and Kashmir. You cannot have development when there is entire population alienated. Now this step has widened the gulf.
You ensured that alienation, good jobs in government.
And elsewhere, they're joining.
You guys are not even willing to discuss.
Political aspirations were left unaddressed right from 53. And erosion of autonomy that was promised by the forefathers, that
it was temporary. I don't need to tell you, you are a former judge, it was temporary.
Okay, Rajat, go ahead with your point. I need to wrap this up with Dr. Chilari in a moment. Yeah.
The point is that a lot of Kashmiri leaders have developed over time a very cocooned approach. They haven't looked at other examples where potentially insurgency has been controlled through development. I work and serve in Manipur. I can tell you states in the northeast, there has been a developmental-based politics which has gone to that region. There are still 70 to 80 active insurgent groups. But gradually we have seen that the society has emerged to a level where they say that, yes, this is not the way forward.
On the basis of jobs?
Of course, see, you need to understand, they also have a lot of land holdings, etc., but that doesn't satisfy the developmental aspirations of the youth. Do you expect that they will continue to till the land like their forefathers and forefathers have been doing? No. They want to be part of the mainstream developmental in the growth story of the country. That is where they
then
feel
why
that
is it that so many youngsters in Jammu and Kashmir, the stone pelters, don't?
You see, you need to, therefore, because so far there has been certain legal foundations wherein development hasn't actually reached in the meeting the aspirations of the youth segments of the society. There have been similar experiments which have been done in the northeast, which have been successful. Why for 70 years you've tried your way?
No, but
why
the army, for example, has been trying to do hearts and minds and reaching out to youngsters through education besides at the larger level, it's worked only in some pockets.
No, that's a complete falsehood. You need to travel with me along in the northeast. Then I'll show you
I'm talking about Kashmir.
Well.
One point, and I'd like you perhaps to reflect on it, is this. One of the reasons why there could be a problem which continues in Jammu and Kashmir, this is an article from Haseeb Dravu I'm reading about, is that all states without exception have been developed by public investment through central public sector enterprises. Now, compare the numbers between other states and Jammu and Kashmir. There are 339 central public sector enterprises in India, having investments of 23 trillion, employing 1.08 million people as of March. Guess how many there are in Kashmir? Three. The capital invested in all of them combined 165 crores. And do you know how many the CPSEs in Kashmir employ? 21. It's a joke. Is this not the problem? There needs to be a greater involvement of the center through central public sector enterprises in giving jobs. You disagree? Go ahead, sir. I just want your views, and I'll come to you. I'll come to you next.
Well, there are two issues here. One is about J&K's natural resources. The most important natural resource of J&K is water. Yes. But unfortunately, under the Indus Waters Treaty, we gifted
to Pakistan
the main rivers of J&K to Pakistan. Now, in terms of economic cost for J&K, the cost has been monumental. Because the only natural resource that J&K has, we have gifted that to the adversary, Pakistan. Now, even the rights we have under Indus Waters Treaty in relation to the rivers that flow from J&K into Pakistan, we have not utilized those rights. So if J&K is to develop rapidly, we'll have to revisit the Indus Waters Treaty. I'm not suggesting abrogation of the Indus Waters Treaty, but there's a lot of room within the existing framework for J&K to benefit.
Okay.
Second,
yes.
Second point is that it's about the situation in the valley.
Yes.
There has been a transformation in a fundamental sense. The pluralistic traditions of the valley have been decimated.
Yes.
And in place we have this Wahhabi Islamist culture which has taken roots, and the valley's entire indigenous minority has been driven out in one of the world's most successful and swiftest ethnic cleansing operations.
Yes.
Now, that cultural barrier to development that has arisen is a formidable barrier. Now, we have to deal with that. And I think we need to first understand one
thing. From an ideological standpoint, a cultural standpoint.
Yes, and we also need to understand one
communications.
One other important element.
How does one do that?
Yeah, one other important element. We treat terrorism as a law and order issue. It is not. You cannot deal with terrorism as a law and order problem. Terrorism has to be dealt with very differently. And we still haven't developed that kind of mindset and approach and strategy to deal with terrorism.
Sanjay, I think that's a fair point that he's talking about. I'd phrase it somewhat differently. The point is this: unless you talk, you cannot reach out. It's not just saying, here are some jobs, here are some reservations, you can get a job over here, here are some pensions. It's the process of talk. We've identified strategy economically. Who's going to do the talking?
What does talk to them? That also you should figure out.
Who
are
does
we talking
talk
about rights? Are we talking about the future? See, I've also seen in the old days, my knowledge of Kashmir comes from the time that my brother was in REC Srinagar. There was a difference between somebody who had not crossed the Jawahar Tunnel, and there was a difference between people who came over and traded in India.
Yes.
Or studied in India. The Manmohan Singh government did something very good. It encouraged Kashmiri students to come over and join in various places.
Yes.
Again, we sort of goofed it up once we started objecting to cricket matches.
Yes.
These are real things.
Yep.
If the country as a whole has to embrace Jammu and Kashmir, and especially the Srinagar, this one, we ultimately have to talk money. And my disagreement earlier was, public sector, no. Public sector is broke. It doesn't have the money. We really need to figure out a way where private sector gets tax relief, gets incentives to go and sit there and work with the people.
I think that's a very fair point. And I need to wrap this program up. I think the big takeaways over here, a couple. Number one, we need to be looking at the future. That doesn't mean we stop debating about what's just ended over here. We need to look seriously at the prospects of economic growth in Jammu and Kashmir, but also accept the fact that whatever we do can only happen if there is a process of communicating, if there's a process of reaching out. We're out of time on The Big Fight. I'd like to thank all of you very much for being with us.